Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Somos Mas, the official podcast of Somos Mas NM and your source for the latest news and notes on New Mexico United and the New Mexico Runners. My name, of course, is Seth Budoff. Joining me this evening, we have the one and only Jacob Turrell, Earl Nieto, who is a happy camper for once. And joining us this evening, special guest from the Raising Anchor podcast, Matt. Matt, we're super happy to have you here. If you're not familiar with the Raising Anchor podcast, they are the fan cast for the brand new Rhode Island FC. And obviously, Rhode Island FC is kicking off their inaugural season this year. And New Mexico United gets the chance to go out there to Rhode Island and play them in their inaugural home match. So, I mean, Matt, first of all, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate you being here. Tell us a little bit, about yourself. How did you get into Rhode Island? Have you been a soccer fan for very long? And what's it like being the premier Rhode Island FC podcast?
Ooh, premier. I love that. It's easy to be premier when you're the only one. I think a couple other places have started one up, or at least are thinking about it. So we'll welcome the competition. But thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. My soccer story is one as old as time. I fell in love with the game during a World Cup match. I was actually studying abroad back in 2006 in Australia, and I watched an entire country or continent, depending on how you look at that place, just kind of shut down during a period of time where everyone started supporting this crazy tournament. And I had never seen that level of sports infection, if you will, from anything back here in the States. So I went out there, fell in love with a girl. That didn't work out. Fell in love with the sport of soccer. And I got to watch one of the most pivotal games I've ever seen in my entire life. So I almost peaked right at the beginning, watching the Australia-Italy game in 2006 that would eventually lead to Italy winning the entire thing. So that was fantastic. I came home. MLS at that time wasn't really a thing for a lot of the people that I knew. It was, I think, number six in the sports index rankings. It was hard to find people that would want to go out and kind of start trying to consume that. So I would go to games, but it just never took off. And I always wanted to do a podcast. I think I joke a lot, and if anyone's heard me on other podcasts, there's like this thing that middle-aged men go through where they either want to buy a sports car, start a bar with a clever name, or do a podcast, right? And podcasts are the cheapest form to exert when it comes to that middle-aged crisis. So
you just define Jacob in like one sentence.
So one of my friends who's also a soccer crazy, more so than I am, and I really always accredit him to being the genius behind our show, we got together and started saying, hey, like, we should do a podcast. But at the time, we didn't know where. So we were kind of tracking the MLS podcasts because we didn't want to step on anyone else's toes. We didn't really have an allegiance to anything going on. So we thought, we'll just jump on the next new team and then do it remotely, right? Like, we'll just kind of be one of those groups. And it just never worked by timing or by experience. I got to tour with some other MLS podcasters, so I kind of got to learn from them the craft and the expectations and how to hold yourself accordingly from a media perspective. So that was a great experience. But it wasn't until we got back together. So Jason, my co-host, he had a time abroad where he was living in Arizona. So don't judge him. He wasn't a Phoenix Rising fan, I promise. But then he finally came to Rhode Island, and then we said, hey, like, there's a team opening up, and it just kind of finally everything clicked. And I think that's the most important thing with a podcast is finding the right people and the right timing, right? So new club, new us, and it just made sense when there was no one else being a voice to advocate for the club at the time.
Yeah, you bring up a really interesting point there, really a couple different things. We talked about the timing and things working out. Number one, Jacob and Earl did a paper the first season that New Mexico United was out here, and then we all transitioned into this in the year two because I was on a different podcast way back in year one. And
you got fired.
No
comment.
no comment on that one. But no, it really is about finding the right group, finding the right set of voices and the right bits of knowledge from everyone involved. And if you look at us, we've evolved, and Earl has Earl comes at it from more of, you know, the fan perspective. Jacob, you know, we talked about this all the time. Jacob is, you know, kind of on the fence. And I come up from a more professional perspective because I also work for a radio station here.
AKA Robot.
Yeah, Robot. There you go. So
you've been the Robot long before 101.7 The Team was calling. So
does it count that none of us on this side of Raising Anchor are consider ourselves professional? I feel like if we lower expectations to the right degree, we can do nothing but improve, right?
Well, when you were going through, oh, you traveled with Emily, you learned all this stuff. I was like, you've been studying to do this forever. And basically, and we just kind of threw it together. Oh, now you're going to fuss? Now that I unmuted the mic? That's how we're going to roll? Anyways, then we decided... Okay, say bye.
I scared her off. I apologize.
It's okay. It was me Rhode Island talking.
I can't wait.
Soon, buddy. Soon. And then it'll be over, and then you'll be sad. Earl is expecting.
You're expecting?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's my first. Thanks.
If he stood up, you could tell.
I was going to say, how did you get the medical science to become the first male to have a baby? Like, tell us more, please. Let's divert this podcast into the
for those of you listening and not watching, please go watch, because that was great.
If that's not worth 100 views itself, I don't know.
It sounds like everything fell into place. I reached out to you. I think I reached out to you, or you reached, I don't know. Somebody reached out to somebody, and we started talking about getting you on and me coming on your guys's. And then shortly after that, you guys hit 10,000 listens, and congratulations on that, by the way. Seeing that post, I was like, holy cow. And I didn't realize at the time when we first started talking exactly how much content you already had out there. And to have 30, what do you got now? 36.
Yeah, 36 before we played a first match ever. That is an insane stat that I like to remind myself that if it fails, we just did a life experience on the development of a soccer product, and we weren't good at covering the game. So this will be kind of our first trial by fire ourselves.
Well, everything so far that I've listened to has been fantastic. You and Jason do a great job, and I think Rhode Island FC is lucky to have you guys being there and covering. I know part of what me and Earl did when we started the newsletter, the newspaper, was because fans wanted more from the get-go. We had one match, and the local Albuquerque Journal had like a 2-inch by 1-inch little blurb that was basically just like, we played Fresno, we tied, end of story. The news outlets weren't covering them. There was nobody out there. And that actually sparked our stuff, Seth and his old podcast. And then The Curse had a podcast at that time. So then all of a sudden it was inundated. And now it's kind of fizzled out to where there's only a handful of things going on still. But we're lucky to have the job. And we love it. So I know you guys will have a great time, especially once the matches start. I mean, it's a totally different experience being able to cover the team and whatnot. So I'm excited for you guys. I'm excited to have you. And I know when me and Seth first talked about getting some other podcasts on the show for different matches, when we found you guys, it was like, oh, we got to talk to them because we're going to be their first match. We were there. It's been 5 years, but it feels like, I don't know, yesterday in some ways, and then it feels like 20 years in some ways. It's really crazy.
What's the episode count where I need to look back and inflect on the mirror, like to continue to strive forward? What's the burnout number?
Well, let's see. This is 160 for us of our main show. And we did a whole bunch we tried an experiment over the off season last year with World Cup.
Do we not? Do we not?
Earl, guess what? You're going to be hosting our next World Cup coverage, just so you know.
I can't wait. I can't wait. All right. So the last time, it's kind of a running joke, I kind of declared war on Saudi Arabia.
Kind of, sort of, really.
Wait, does this put me on a hit list by being on this podcast and you saying that?
No, yes. I think it's over with now. The 90-day span had passed until he mentioned it just now.
I'm on a watch list now. Yeah, thanks, Earl.
You'll need to watch out.
But no, you know, you look at what you talk about, your introduction into the media and coming at it from a media perspective. you know, even for us, you know, we've been doing it. There's still times where we're like, okay, do we really get to do this every week? You know, and we're having to integrate ourselves in and conduct ourselves in a professional manner, even though we are a fan cast, you know. You look at other podcasts from around the league, some have had longevity, you know, unfortunately some have shut down. And then, you know, there are some that, you know, that we've tried to interact with that just aren't responsive. And with lower league soccer, it's all about visibility. So when you have shows, you know, that do have, you know, a year's worth of episodes, you know, there are some podcasts that didn't even make it a year. So I think for me, from my perspective, if you make it a year, you make it the first season, you're still going, like, absolutely. You can look back and be like, okay, that's a good time frame. Look back, okay, what did we do wrong in the beginning? Where are we now? I mean, we're still learning. We're still evolving. We're still working on things. And, you know, we're still trying to figure out the social media thing, you know, 5 years into this. But yeah, give yourself a year. Look back and be like, okay, where do we start? Where are we now? And then, you know, look at opportunities to continue to expand and grow. And, you know, like I said, Jacob and I, we have conversations, you know, Jacob and I have conversations regularly. You know, what can we do? You know, what are we doing right? What are we doing wrong? You know, the podcast I was on initially, it would get so far off the rails and then have to try to rein it back in. If you can, you know, you listen to us, we go off, but we have ways to come back.
Right.
You know, and so it's making it to where it's a listenable thing that people want to keep listening to. And the more you do it, the more comfortable you're going to be, the more knowledgeable you're going to be, and the more comfortable, you know, players and club front office members are going to be with you. So just some different things that we've learned.
Have you tried product placement yet? I don't know if
we've tried a few things.
So can we do the Raising Anchor collab Duran's green chili sauce that I still haven't used, but I don't know how to appropriately use. So I'm going to need a New Mexico United fan to teach me.
You just put it on everything. You put it on anything and everything.
Just drink it right now?
Or? Yeah, I mean, you could do that. Throw it
That'll
on.
Get you all the likes, right?
Yeah. Throw it on hot dogs. Throw it on burgers especially. Apple pie. And you might think I'm joking there, but... You throw some green chili on an apple pie, a piece of slice of apple pie with some vanilla ice cream, and it's delicious.
While we're on this tangent, real quick, and then we
15 minutes in, and we haven't talked about your match or our first match.
No, that's
it's almost like the beginning of the broadcast to your first match. We'll just pretend, like we'll cut the audio at the last second. Earl, I interrupted you though. I apologize.
Oh, you're good. You're good. So, speaking of random foods and what to put things on and what not to.
That's not what we were speaking about, but okay.
We were just talking about random putting green chili sauce on apple pie. So
that's not random. That's a thing.
Go ahead. And you're going to think I'm freaking weird, but I kid you not. And I swear by it. My pregnant fiance swears by it too. Oreos and sour cream.
I've heard of it.
My kids have done that.
It's freaking good.
I've heard of it. I understand where the goodness could be, but I'm an Oreos in milk. That's the only way I'll eat Oreos. That's the only way I'll ever eat Oreos. So you can keep your Oreos and sour cream.
Oreos and whipped cream. Oreos and whipped cream.
And we're going to move on now. Because you just...
Yeah, you know, Jacob, you have about, you know, it's real quick, the green chili. My boss today at work was talking about putting green chili in milkshakes. I think there's no way that's a thing. He goes, yeah, it's a
thing. You have red chili too.
There you go.
Was it Kevin that sent you this care package? I think it was, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was Kevin. So
he's the one that has 25 kids.
Right, and apparently he has $25 to send me chili sauce as well. So he's actually coming out to the game.
He is
this weekend. So he's bringing his family, and we're gonna try to roll the red carpet out for him. Perfect. And the supporters group Defiant 1636 is gonna take care of him as well. So really excited that he's able to come out.
Beautiful. You can't miss him, by the way. He's like 6'4". With a big red beard and red hair. I mean, he's pretty noticeable. So anyways, I guess we can talk about soccer if y'all want to.
We can. I mean, we've obviously been in a place before where we didn't have a match on opening day. So Matt, what did you watch on opening weekend? Did you watch New Mexico United to kind of get a feel of what you may see next weekend? Did you watch something else? You know, what stood out to you from week one?
So absolutely started with the New Mexico United game. One, to do the homework, right? Two, wanted to understand what the state of the state with the Riverhounds was. We that team has been cannibalized by the league, but especially by Rhode Island FC, you know, having stolen Chico, Albert Diqua, and Mark Ibarra. So I wanted to see kind of how they showed up as a potential Eastern Conference rival as well. I know we'll get into the unpack of that game, but you guys just put a hurt locker on. Like, I mean, I just incredible showing, and I did not expect that quality, not to downplay New Mexico United, but it was just, it is a really fun way to kind of start the season.
We didn't expect it either, Matt.
And then I also watched the Hartford Athletic game because I was a former, and don't hold this against me, but last year I randomly picked a team and I picked El Paso because of the logo. Don't judge me. It's over. That moment in time has happened. We don't talk. I deleted their phone number from my phone. It's done.
All right, fair enough.
So there's a cool thing that we have going on here, and it's called FEP. You can definitely take that one on. It means F El Paso.
If I need to tattoo it to prove my loyalty to a team that I'm hoping we beat later this week, I mean, I'll do it. Whatever it takes. For you to get views on this podcast, I will drink green chili sauce and get a tattoo. But live. I want a cut of that revenue.
Can you do it live? Can we schedule this? Like,
well, and I don't feel pressure to feel the same way, Matt. But I typically select an Eastern Conference team that I root for and follow. Obviously, I mean, you guys have yellow for one. It's a different shade of yellow, but you have yellow. The excitement that I've seen around the fan base there already reminds me of us when we started. And you guys have, I mean, absolutely. Is it the energy kits, the blue one? What's the other one called?
The road kit. We got really clever with our road away kit there.
R-H-O-D. That one with the ropes and the, I mean, that's just, it's perfection. And then what you guys are doing with the pod, it's hard for me not to root for you guys for 33 weeks after Saturday.
Talk again at the end of October, right? Maybe we'll have to get back to some mainstay alliances, but for the time being, after this Saturday, we can talk. We can be friends.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the great things. Again, we mentioned, you know, lower league soccer depends on fan interaction. You know, there's a lot of, you know, media at the lower league levels, and that's how teams get supported, because there's only a handful of folks at the national level that are covering the league at any sort of level of importance to them.
In the chat, so Jacob just said that he's going to follow Rhode Island religiously.
So
this is also called the Jacob curse.
Wait, Rhode no, Island I don't want is, that.
No. I don't have a curse. Team Earl over here, Robert Rain, he's been non-existent for months. Months he's not been in the chat.
I miss you, buddy. I miss you, buddy.
You come in here, and you just start throwing things out like that. Get rid of this guy. Get rid of this guy.
Anyway, let's get into it. Let's break down
real fast though.
Opener match.
To be fast, I was a fan of El Paso when they were third place. The minute I became their fan, they did go almost all the way to the bottom. So maybe secretly I helped you. You're welcome. Yeah, I don't know.
I'll take you.
We'll accept that.
Yeah. But yeah, you know, you're if you want to keep being right. El Paso fan, you know, that
low key,
maybe it'll help.
Low key.
Maybe that'll help. Week one is in the books. We've talked about it. We waited for it. We dissected it as best we could without having seen a whole lot from anybody in this preseason in terms of live action. Jacob and Earl, you guys were out at the lab on Saturday, obviously watching at home. And, you know, Matt, you saw on the broadcast as well. We were listening to Memphis 901 for about 15 minutes. My discussions with the club were the league is working on it. So they finally got that all sorted out. And there was, I don't know if you guys went mad to watch it, there was a change in one particular read from last season, which I am so thankful for. But watching this match, this is what we saw, what we saw last year and then some. We saw the pace, we saw the control from the midfield. We saw New Mexico United work, and that work rate, particularly through the middle, was absolutely incredible on Saturday. I loved what I saw. Marco Micheletto came in and he was just a dominant force throughout that match on Saturday. And obviously New Mexico ended up with a 1-0 win over Pittsburgh, a very different Pittsburgh. And I saw one article that in fact said they got out lilyballed. Now, I don't know how I feel about that because we didn't necessarily drop back and defend. We were still going forward throughout the second half. But you guys were there. What did you see? And Earl, let's start with you.
I mean, let me go to my notes real quick.
He's going with printed notes.
No, I handwrite these son bitches.
There you go.
So I really liked what I saw on Saturday. The team looked hungry. They were fierce and constantly firing the ball and attacking the ball too. Like they wanted the ball at their feet, no matter who it was. They overwhelmed Pittsburgh for the first half. I don't think there was any shots on goal for Pittsburgh the first half, maybe one or two, compared to the million that United took. They didn't allow Pittsburgh to be themselves. I mean, Pittsburgh, we said it, they're known for defensively locking their heels in and calling it good. But when they tried that, we just attacked harder and sent more people up. I liked what I saw out of the attack, especially seeing Hirsty score. And just the... Oh, Josh, by the way, I still have that Only Dad's hat. It was in the comments, so I had to acknowledge
yes.
It.
He's so, very, like, a butterfly when it comes to the comments.
Yeah, I love comments and butterflies.
Focus, Earl.
Oh, yeah. Pittsburgh, like I said, they got hammered the entire first half. They were saved by the halftime whistle. I think if it's not for the halftime whistle, I think we put another one in. I think we should have went into half with looking at least three. Eric Dick, he stood on his freaking head, and no pun intended. And just... He played a very good defensive first half until the last one that Hirsty put in the back. And then Seth, you said it. Even at the end of the match and the end of the first half, New Mexico United still had the eagerness to attack and press, even with the subs that came on. And we saw Harris come on. We saw Sergio come on. And I'm drawing a blank on who the last one was. But all the three subs that came on, they continued to attack and continued to play the entire game plan that we had played for the first 90 minutes of the game.
Yeah, it was really interesting to see the interplay between the guys. And you know, talk about the last Deion Harris was the last guy to come on. So the guys were it was Nikki, Sergio, and Deion Harris, that came on. Harris. Really, really great substitutions. And I saw a couple comments about this, and Jacob, let's get your take on it. You know, in the past, not necessarily under Quill, we've seen very defensive-minded subs when we happen to be up by a goal or two goals, or you know, even if we're trying to salvage a point out of this. But these three subs here, they're not necessarily defensive-minded. What was your take on these three subs from Coach Quill and the mindset behind those guys coming in when they did?
Well, we don't really have defensive-minded midfielders. All of our midfielders are either box-to-box, kind of do everything, or they are on the front foot. And because of that, I don't – like you looked at the 18, and we had Flanagan, who may be defensive-minded, and then the two center backs. And those are like the only defensive players that we had on the bench. And so it was exciting to see fresh legs come on. The fresh legs definitely hurt Pittsburgh a little bit there. Nikki had a great chance with an open header that I believe Harris created. And then just constantly they were just – their work, the work rate was phenomenal. And one thing that – like, we talked plenty about the first half, but even before the match, the lab felt like the lab again, which I think was really important. The curse marching into the match was the one of the bigger marches that I've seen in the last couple of years. There was definitely a bigger buzz before the match even started compared to last season, even at the early stages of last season. Something just felt kind of quiet. And so before the match, the fans were getting into it. Then the match starts. And I think everybody that I talked to at the match and the comments that we've had on Facebook about the match and stuff like that were blown away by the speed, the way we controlled the midfield, our one-touch passes, and our everybody's ability on the ball. Almost everybody can dribble by one or two people pretty easily unless they're really collapsed down upon. And so just fantastic play, especially in that first half. In the second half, we were able to stay steady. And Pittsburgh, one thing about Pittsburgh is this Pittsburgh club anyways, their star forward that they brought in to kind of try to replace Dequa didn't play. And Sterling, their two center backs that they brought in from League One that were League One standouts didn't play. Their normal number six in Griffin was actually playing center back. It was a very weird. There were some weird choices being made.
They had a weird injury, an early injury too.
Yeah, I don't know if it was an it was an injury.
Yeah, because he came out of the locker room and he was hobbling with ice on, so he picked up something.
The altitude definitely didn't help him. It also, I don't know if you knew this, Seth, but the home dugout or the home locker room was being renovated still.
Mm-hmm.
So we came out of the visitor locker room there on the third baseline, and Pittsburgh's locker room was a tent in the outfield in the bullpen. Which not a great look, I will admit that, but it happened. And I know that they probably weren't feeling great about that, but nonetheless,
well, I will say it was better than some of the conditions we saw. Was it Birmingham a couple of years ago where they had like sand?
It was
Birmingham. Yeah. That was bad.
Guys, you take every tactical advantage you can. Sometimes you make the grass wet. Sometimes you put people outside to dress for their game. That's what you do. Yeah. But if I can unpack something that was said there, I did notice that the Riverhounds were slightly misshapen from what I think a lot of people thought the formation would be. But you know, a 5-3-2, 2-3-5, it's not unlike Lily Ball to be cagey, defensive, absorb pressure, and then, you know, especially with what Dequa did last year, take those single chances, convert them, and with a scoreline of 1-0, right? I applaud what New Mexico United did in the first half, where either they understood the assignment and they knew how to dismantle Lily Ball. That was a 5-back line. And with the single touch passing and give and goes that you guys set up, I think Akali is a new signing for you guys this year. That's correct. Mm-hmm. So like you didn't even need his speed on the wing, but you did use it from side to side play. Like your crosses across to him was some of the best. That was EPL level passing at moments inside the game. So like, don't take any credit away from, in my opinion, the lack of what the Riverhounds showed up with. If you're still going to park five people in the back and your team can dismantle at the effectiveness that was, I think the Reyes pass was what really unlocked everything. And it was central passing too, right? This wasn't crosses. This wasn't wing play coming in and cutting in. It was a clinic. And, you know, for the first 45, I don't think Pittsburgh knew how to react to that. And it took them a halftime locker room in a tent out on the field to kind of shape things up and try to figure out how to contain what disaster they had walked into.
Well, you mentioned through the middle. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
But that goal starts with Marco dropping way back, getting a 10-yard pass from Ryden, and Marco picking his head up right in the middle of the pitch and then just taking out five Pittsburgh defenders with this through pass that breaks multiple lines to get to Reyes. And not only that, but Reyes is in space somehow where he can turn and just drive at that, the back five. And then of course the Reyes ball takes everybody else out of the way. And I think Josh mentions it right here. Once I got home, and especially United posted a kind of a slow-mo stylized video of that goal, watching it live, me and Earl, because we were on that side by the third or by the first base dugout, it looks like Hurst stumbles and gets lucky to just tap it in. But then you watch what actually happened, and he hits him with a step over and then a drag. And then, yes, he does kind of stumble once he gets clear of Dick, but he's still able to keep his composure enough to get a touch on it.
He knew where the ball was at.
It was from Marco to Hurst. All three touches there were just absolutely incredible. And we saw that several times. I mean, there were several through balls right through the heart of that Pittsburgh defense that just took multiple people out and should have ended up with another goal somewhere along the line. But at the end of the day, finishing is one of the last things to come during preseason. And so I think we'll see a few of those other shots. Like Reyes had a wide open shot from about the 12 yard line, basically, that he just doesn't quite get to the corner just enough. And Dick was huge, like physically, he was huge. And so you really had to hit those top bins to get something by him if you didn't have enough pace on it. And he just missed that. But everything else was there. Everything else was spectacular. The defense did everything that they had to do. Keeps a clean sheet. Tambakis really wasn't challenged. I mean, from front to back, in all aspects of the match, it was solid.
Yeah, that's
just
was
a touch
too.
On the... Sorry, go ahead, Earl. I was going to say, just a touch on the Josh Gonzalez comment. His dribbling accuracy has gotten better and better. We were talking to a member. We're talking to somebody at the match on Saturday, and he kind of broke down the El Paso thing for us. Where we got beat 3-0, but a lot of it wasn't us trying to score. A lot of it was us trying to work on our timing with each other. A lot of it was gelling instead of scoring. Hersey was working on his footwork and his ball control and ball movement. A lot of the flicks that you saw was a lot of work from El Paso. So, I mean, Hersey, this offseason alone, definitely moves steps above, probably knowing that he's going to be the guy now. And I asked him in the press conference, him being the kind of like the locker room leader now, being one of the oldest ones, what his message is to the guys, because that's what it is. Like, he is the veteran, so now he has to step up and take his game to the next level.
Yeah, I wanted to touch on Hurst as well. You watch that sequence there, you watch him throughout the game. Hurst looks better than he did last year. Mm-hmm. He looks like he's in a better place physically. And you could see the way that he played off the shoulder of the defenders. And they were looking for those through balls throughout the match. And in the run-up to that goal-scoring play, when Jacobo has that ball, you can see Hurst drop back a couple yards. And so where he's at when that ball is played, he's not on the defender's shoulder. He's a couple yards deeper. And so he makes that run through and picks it up. And so that was just fantastic timing. And that just, like you said, it just sliced through that back line. And that's something that we've really struggled with in the past, is playing against, super defensive teams that sit in that low block, five at the back. And this is something that we have been clamoring for seasons now. And we seem to finally have a team that can maybe do this. And that's really something to look forward to throughout the rest of the year. And then you just look at the way you talk about, Jacob, you mentioned the defensive play. I do want to highlight that our newly minted captain had not necessarily a great day. He had a couple mistakes. Fairly early in the first half, and then he gave the ball away again later in the defensive third on just I don't know what he was doing, but
I don't understand. So Juan Pablo Guzman and Sam Hamilton are to Earl what Kalen Rydin is to you. And I don't understand it.
No, and see, the thing is, like, so you watch Kalen after the injury 2 years ago. Kalen did not play the same. He didn't. And then you watched him at the beginning of last year. He was getting sucked up into the midfield a lot, and he wasn't, he didn't have the reaction time. And he got better as the season went along. And it's not that I dislike Kalen. I love Kalen. I think Kalen's a great defender, but he had a couple moments in that game where it was just an ill-advised pass and in a bad area. So he gives away the corner real early in the,
that, know, early that early wasn't the his half. Fault. That he's not in the position he's supposed to be in there because of how things transpired, and he ended up getting sucked up to where he wasn't one of the center backs passing to a midfielder there. He ended up having to play the bailout person right there, and the pass came into him way too hot, and he couldn't get his foot right. It should have been a better pass by him, but I'm not gonna sit here and be like, oh, he's terrible. I'm not saying you're saying he's terrible, no. But that was just an unfortunate series of events. That when we talked, actually, we talked to Talon Maples, was one of the players that we got to talk to after the match, who performed very, 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 very well in his first start. Something that surprised me when we saw the team sheet was that he was going to be starting. I've been saying the whole time I thought it was going to be Seymour and Rydin because that's the go-to there. But he said that first 5 to 6 minutes where they had like four corners. Mm-hmm. He said most they chalked that up to some bad bounces and some just small miscues that can get cleaned up really easily. And that was inside that time frame of just, I think, the back line kind of finding their feet. Mm-hmm. With, I just saw a kid pass by and I thought it was my kid and I was about to yell. Anyways.
Nope. That is my youngest.
And so I kind of take that whole 6-7 minute span at the beginning. Hi, buddy. Plus Kalen's mistake there. And I just kind of throw those out because after that point, they were rocks back there, I thought. And Kalen might've, I can't recall the other mistake that you're mentioning, but if I can't recall it, that means it, you know, I probably didn't think too much of it.
It was a lot of the half, first. We were going hold on. North. He tried passing. It was in second half. So we were going towards the north goal. He passed towards the third base side of the pitch. And it just went to nobody. It went straight to Pittsburgh.
Okay.
And the defensive third. So it was just, it was like a couple minor things, but it was just the spots that they were giving away that made it worse than what it was. If it had occurred in different places on the pitch, like if you don't give up the corner, you know, if you don't turn the ball over in defensive third, you don't think too much about it. But when it happens in those areas, it's like, okay, what happened here? You know?
And Josh, that's my exact same thing I was about to say. So you read my mind and you beat me to the punch. A lot of the first 10 minutes, 10, 15 minutes was a lot of nervous ball. I mean, this is the first time the team has ever played together in a live environment without not being the black and yellow scrimmage. So a lot of it was getting used to how they play in live environment in front of 10,000 plus fans and hearing the noise, because it was rocking in there. It was crazy loud. It was definitely year one vibes mixed with the return of the COVID season all in one. It was fanboy where you got chills. Like, no matter who you are, I mean, you could be a Pittsburgh fan and you're going to get damn chills in that place.
We did see one Pittsburgh fan.
Yeah.
Just one?
Right. Yeah, that's all I saw. But yeah, I thought Kalen looked physically better as far as like fitness wise and healthy wise. And so I'm not worried about that. I thought Astorga got beat a couple times, but he was playing so high up that he was covering a lot of ground. And so I didn't put that anything. Everything else was, I thought Maples handled himself well. Gloucester didn't. I mean, I never even had to think of him on the defensive side of the ball. He was either always in the right position or was making plays. And so I want to ask
whenever Astorga sunk up a little bit, our back line definitely shifted to cover that hole for him while he went and did his thing up in the front.
Right.
Go ahead,
but that's where, and so as an outsider, like you're trying to track who were the best performers on the night, and then who were the leaky sieves that you could take advantage of when it's our time. And I'll be honest, Ryden didn't really flag for me. I noticed a lot of forward momentum coming from Pittsburgh was through that right flank when they were trying to expose and overextended Astorga. Maples didn't have a bad showing at all. He was very solid in shape and containment, but the closest attacks that threatened Timbakas were coming from that side. So like, yeah, Ryden did have a couple of moments where I think maybe he did get dragged into the midfield as your two. I don't know if those are your holdings or if like it's a mix of like a cam and a defensive midfielder. But when they would marshal up the field, Ryden was kind of overextending himself. I didn't think he needed to do that to fill that space. But it was apparent. Like if I'm Coach Kano right now for Rhode Island FC, I'm thinking of if this is the same shape and formation, how can we get Astorga to overcommit and then punished with a speedy flank? And we have, and we'll talk about that, I assume, in the preview part, but we have the kind of weapon that can punish something like that. So for me, if this is the current formation, and again, every one of your players showed up fantastically well on the day, but I'd be looking at how that you can unlock that overextension. Cause I didn't see your left back at all in the game. And that's a good thing, right? Like if they're the silent defender, they're positioned well, there's nothing coming down that flank, then perfect. But that's where I'd be spying how we can unlock a goal out of that right defensive side.
For sure. And you mentioned looking at performers as far as who stood out, who could you attack? I really wanted to get, I asked Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, I asked everybody, you know, who stood out, who was the man of the match, who was the newcomer that stood out the most, and then who looked maybe like they needed a little bit more from them. And we got back a ton of answers, which I think is a good thing because it meant everybody had strong performances. And so I wanted to ask you three, man of the match is kind of overplayed, but just who stuck out to you, a name or two that really jumped off the page as far as they're going to be, especially you, Matt, who do you think is going to be a problem come Saturday in Rhode Island?
I have to go with your number 10, Micheletto, if I'm saying that right. But his ability to hold the ball and bring defensive-minded shape and welcome it on, whether it was on a one-on-one challenge and then a distribution, or like you saw with that laser beam that he passed through the middle, his ability to command the momentum for New Mexico United, it can't be ignored. So much of your attack ran centrally that I think his third pass of the game was a cross, a forward lobbed cross that perfectly caught Akale at his feet. And it was just like, oh man, like I didn't know this was a thing in the USL.
It was so great. Yeah, it was great.
I think his ability to set the tempo, and if he can command that against other teams, that's your key player. And that, at least for this game, that's who showed up for me.
And he does it seemingly without breaking a sweat. Like
it's a five aside. Yeah.
Yeah. So effortlessly was able to do everything that you just mentioned and more without even really looking like it was hard. That's what stood out to me was I think Reyes had a better game or was a little more impactful on the offensive side of the ball in certain ways, but Reyes was working. Like you saw Reyes like having to put in a crap load of effort to make these different plays and stuff. And Marco just looked, I mean, he just was ridiculous. That was Marco and Reyes were probably the two names that I got back the most through social media. And it makes perfect sense to me. But Earl, did you get a chance to go rewatch it all, or are you just going off of what we saw?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I rewatched it. I listened to it on the way home. And then whenever I got home, I actually watched the match. And yeah. So my man of the match, it's kind of hard because how good we played. So I don't really have one man in the match. I think the subs that came on and that did not negatively affect the match, but instead played the same game plan that we'd been playing, like I mentioned before. I think those are my ones that stood out. But if I have to choose a man in the match, I need you two up top to put your seatbelts on, because I'd have to say Tambakis.
What the fuck?
As an outsider, I he wasn't challenged though.
Thank like, you.
There was
so here's
Earl. There was one reason shot why. In the 12th minute. I think that he had.
I think
put
he had
glove
one
on.
Save.
Yeah.
Here's my reason why. That. Because at the end, when we had the corners, when we had the,
okay.
I see Jacob losing his shit over there.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna go off on you in a minute.
So, I can't even fuck with you anymore. I really can't.
He had two saves. He had two saves.
I really can't. My opinion, my man in the match is Jacobo Reyes.
I hate you.
I will say Jacobo looks better than he did last year, too.
Yeah, just the impact that he made, especially in the first half, just all over, always forcing. Definitely showed improvement from last season. I think he wasn't comfortable last season when he came in. He didn't have enough time to get acclimated to what was going on and all the changes that happened all at once.
He also got
hurt. It was a big thing for him. So him showing out on Saturday definitely earned my nod for him. And it sucks because I know I stole Jacob, so I hope he... You figure out something.
No, we're good. Don't worry about it. Seth, what about you?
Hey, honestly,
Christina does bring up a good point. Tambakis did make team of the week bench. So maybe Earl was actually onto something there.
So I actually did have notes on Tambakis. So here's a fun fact. Last season, Tambakis had 4 clean sheets.
Fair.
Mm-hmm. He's already a quarter of the way there.
You're jinxing yourself.
I'm not worried.
That's why I didn't say nothing.
If you listen to anything of last season, it was pretty hostile.
Earl doesn't care for Tambakis.
For me, it may sound a bit odd, but Coach Quill, he came out with a game plan. He's told us all last year. He told us all offseason. He told us all preseason. We're going to come out. We're going to play attacking football. We're going to play exciting football. And he put out an 11 that did that for 75 minutes. And then he brought on 3 subs that continued to do that. Mm-hmm. And you guys mentioned earlier, finishing and goals are the last thing to come in preseason. We don't put much stock into preseason. We don't see what happens. We don't know exactly what that is. And hearing what they're working on the preseason, it's already showing. Mm-hmm. One match in, you can see the effect of the talent that Coach Quill has brought in. You can see what they've been working on in the preseason. And I just, again, historically, we would have sat back. We wouldn't have been pushing that attack in the second half. 60 minutes on, we would have been sitting back, letting Pittsburgh come to us and then try to find a way to, to stay out of it. But, you go into a match, you give up, I think it was, 7 shots total throughout the entire match. Yeah. It wasn't much at all. And I think I'm overestimating there without looking at it. No real threat, at all on goal outside of, those couple corners in the early minutes. And, this is a team that's going to be fun to watch all year long. I like what Coach Quill did on Saturday against, again, a Bob Lilly team that mm-hmm. came out with a very tight defense that was willing to sit there and take everything we threw at them. And we found a way to win.
So you said Coach Quill. That brings me to my next good point. Congrats, by the way, on your Coach of the Week.
I like how he says my next good point is if he had one to begin with. love you, Earl. He gets named USL Coach of the Week. Marco and Reyes are both great shouts for standouts. I would probably have both of those over the guy that I'm going to mention, but I like to spread the love around, and I think there's a name that we haven't mentioned in that conversation that also made Team of the Week, actually Team of the Week instead of on the bench, and that's, of course, Greg Hurst. What I loved about him was I saw him do multiple different things. I saw him make those darting runs, like on the goal, and a couple other times he was able to do that. He also dropped back when he needed to drop back and get the ball and play a little bit of holdup. He just was very versatile, and that's the whole team was kind of like, and if you watch Ted Lasso, which if you don't, Earl, why not? You should. They later in the seasons, they talk about total football, and you really saw some of that really coming through with how everybody was kind of all over the place. And, you know, we come out in a 4-2-3-1 type shape, and it stayed pretty consistent, but the players in those positions were constantly flipping back and forth, and Hurst was able to drop back, let Reyes move forward, which I think Seth had mentioned earlier, and his ability to do that and be good to great at all the aspects that we asked him to do was really key. And it's going to bring, I was talking with a friend of mine that's not on the pod, believe it or not, about United, and it's going to be very interesting when everybody's healthy, who doesn't make the 18. And we have Abu Dinladi, who comes in with a lot of hype, former number one MLS super draft pick, played for Minnesota and Nashville the last 2 years, has scored goals at the MLS level, really big signing, was super pumped to have him come in. And I think it's going to be tough for him to see the field the way Hurst is playing. And that, to me, says a lot about where Hurst was when Quill came in and his ability to adapt and really take the coaching from Eric Quill and what Quill's trying to do with him and turn that into two goals against Memphis to finish the regular season last year. And then this performance today, we're real fortunate to have him turn it on like that. And Dunlady's going to have to come in once he's fully fit and really fight for minutes, which I think is a good thing for both of them.
I mean, just imagine, you know, Daniel Bruce comes back from injury, Dunlady comes back, Christian Nava comes back. You know, just the wealth of talent that we have sitting there. It's going to be hard. You know, like you said, it's always going to be hard to see who doesn't make the 18 every week. But when you have those guys all back and healthy.
And we were able to talk to somebody from the club about their health, all three of those players' health. Dunlady and Bruce are days away. They will probably be available for selection against Rhode Island. What that means, Matt. For
bring it on.
Who? What that means for who makes the 18, and if there's any changes to the starting 11, I don't know. We'll also, of course, get Nanan Hosu back following the red card suspension that he had to serve. And from what we heard from the people that we talked to with the club, I wouldn't be surprised if he starts in place of like a Zico Bailey, or the formation is actually changed a little bit to have him play more of a number six role. And I know the members of the front office there are really excited about him. And from what we saw at the black and yellow scrimmage, me and Earl, I understand why he looked fantastic there. And so I'm thinking he's going to start. I had him in my starting 11 prediction for this match until we found out he had to serve the red card suspension, because I hadn't looked that up. And so between him, Dunlady, and Bruce, all, you know, right there on the cusp of coming back, it's going to be very interesting Saturday to see what the 18 looks like and who's left off of it. Nava, on the other hand, he seems like he's a ways away still. Me and Earl watched all three of those players go through some drill work before the match. And he was significantly slower than what we know Nava to be, of course. And then we saw him after they were done coming off, noticeably limping on that leg. And it's a real big bummer, but I hope he can, you know, take the time to get fully fit, come back with that same speed and energy that he has to truly make a difference, maybe for the second half of the season, maybe a little bit before that.
So what I heard, and I can't remember where I heard it, is Nava, I guess he, that's what I was about to say, Tom. Nava should be back sometime in April.
That's what I've heard from other fans. It's hard for me to believe with what we saw on Saturday.
Yeah.
And even walking off, we were right there by the entrance to the locker room, and he mentally looked beaten at times. And I hate to see it, man. I hate to see it. It's so tough. And to have, you know, that homegrown that has all the hype in the world and looks spectacular when he's on the pitch to have that injury and then to have a setback and still be struggling with it, it breaks my heart. But he knows that the other players love him and are rooting for him. He knows that everybody in the stands Saturday plus some are rooting for him. And so I hope he comes back in April, but it's going to be direct quote from him. Hopefully that's true. I really do hope that.
Well, Jacob, you mentioned a few minutes ago a little bit about players available for selection on Saturday. And let's get right into it. Obviously, we're heading out to Rhode Island for the inaugural match and home opener for Rhode Island FC on Saturday. This is, again, a 2 o'clock kickoff for us. And the reason that, you know, one of the biggest reasons that Matt is here, I mean, Matt, tell us a little bit about Rhode Island. Tell us, you know, we're familiar with some of the names. What have you seen from Rhode Island, and what should we be watching for on Saturday?
Yeah, it's a great question. Honestly, it's a tough sell as someone who's drinking from the well that is Rhode Island FC right now to not oversell this. But much like before the club even started signing players, I was doing research last year on the league, listening to you guys back in the day to understand, you know, that kind of stuff. And for what I can gather, you know, and from what's been shared as the opinion from other people around the league, is Rhode Island FC is trying to differentiate itself from other expansion clubs and really come out the gate swinging, so to speak.
Sure.
The amount of money that this club has put into its roster construction, I can't find a parallel in the last 5 years. It seems like historically USL clubs that are either promoted up through self-promotion or purchase that expansion fee and build their teams, they usually have a more conservative base, trying to get the lay of the land, make sure they establish themselves. And then once they've got that kind of understanding, that's when they start making the more tactical plays or the big splashes. So, you know, before we even had our first signing, everyone had us at, you know, the ninth place for the season. And that's just not what this front office went out and did. The first thing they did was they cannibalized some of the best players out of the San Diego Loyal. And with the signing of Koke Vegas and Grant Stoneman. So there's a synergy and a combination there that saw the Loyal take all the way to the playoffs before getting knocked out by Phoenix. And then every other move has been really nuanced in terms of acquisition. So there's this polarity, if you will, where it's almost like Coach Cano went out to find two or three key factors in each of his signings. One was, if I sign you, who's another player in your squad I can take along with you? Number two is, who, if anyone, had a captaincy material at some point in their career, either professionally or collegiately? And number three is does this fit my style? We had the pleasure of interviewing Coach Cano back in September before there was an announced signing, and he kind of unpacked his ethos, his strategy, and what he wanted to see. And, you know, it makes sense, because a lot of the times, and let's use the Riverhounds as an example, you're not doing a total build construction year over year. I know that that's a little more familiar for USL fans because of single year player contracts and free agency, but most of the time you're taking a core, you're taking a spine, or you're taking some of the players along for the ride. Cano got to cook for 9 months before he had to pull the trigger. So he knew what he wanted to go and get. And I think he was realistic about it. we just recently learned that the DEQA conversations started taking place in June of last year, right? This was something that was not a last minute. He hadn't signed with someone. This was a concentrated effort. There was an intent behind that. And that came after they signed JJ Williams from Tampa Bay. So as far as roster construction goes, just from an outsider looking in, there's an intent here. And you guys said something earlier, I think it was you, Jacob, about the commitment New Mexico United has to play explosive, exciting soccer. It's the same on this side. Everything that Cano seems to be leaning towards is a score first mentality, and then, you know, respond to the shape and the design of the game as a result of that. I think combined, I was doing some research, and of all the forwards that we signed, I think they combined for a total of, and don't quote me, but I think it was like 63 goals last season.
Sounds about right. I mean, Deco himself had 20.
Right. And Noah Fusan actually had more from Columbia Crew 2 with the MLS Next Pro. So it's like our depth has just as many or more goals as our senior starters. So it's just, there's an insanity to this, but it all makes sense at the end. Again, for those combinations, you see Stoneman and in Vegas, you see Prince Sadie and Connor McGlynn, arguably probably the two best players from Hartford. We went out and stole our new Derby rivals. We stole two of their best players in a team that didn't make sense either on paper or on the pitch last season. Mm-hmm. We went and took those out. We have Mark Ibarra and Chico. There's a Columbus Crew connection with Noah Fusan and Clay Holstead. Like, it's just insane the amount of talent that Coach Cano has been able to pull from his prior connections to the many clubs that he's helped facilitate, but also the New England area. And I know that this is kind of like almost a PR feeling at times, but signing Rhode Island players to play for Rhode Island FC is a huge thing. So we recently signed Nate Silvera from Crown Legacy FC as a third goalkeeper, and then local hometown hero Kevin Vang from Providence College, who he played last week and scored against in a final preseason friendly. So the design of this team will be explosive. I anticipate that there will be a lot of goals. I think there may need to be some gelling that happens. It is, like to one of the comments earlier, it will be an opening game for us. So I'm sure there will be some nerves, and I'm sure it will take some time to settle into everything. But everything we're seeing from the preseason scrimmages and everything we're seeing from this roster construction is that this will at least be a high-scoring team. But one last thing I also want to unpack is that, and I don't know if this is because Rhode Island FC played down to teams in their preseason. There was only one USL championship competition in their scrimmage set. The rest were either MLS Next Pro, MLS, or collegiate talent. But there was a wide range of goals scored and versus goals against. We only gave up one goal on average per scrimmage, with the exception of the Orlando City main squad. So, you know, everyone's been talking about this explosive, we're going to score lots of goals, but either we have to start thinking considerably that this defense is also online and ready to go, or there's going to be a real test with the likes of New Mexico United coming in this Saturday to see if they really can stand up against that kind of pressure.
Well, and one thing that you said that sticks out to me is the want to attack, right? To play an attacking style football, to be on the front foot. The East is not really known for that. The East has always been known as a Lily Ball-esque type conference. And not to say they don't score goals. I mean, Tampa Bay can score with anybody with Cal Jennings up there. Lou City is always going to be up there. I mean, but that's been more calculated, I would say, and not necessarily like what we saw New Mexico do, which I think is part of what Pittsburgh had a problem with. And so I think it sets you up to at least be kind of a different attack or a different problem that the Eastern Conference teams are going to have to solve. And that's exciting. And then you mentioned signing homegrown talent. Like, New Mexico has had at least one New Mexican on the roster the whole time. And in year one, I think we had five. Mm-hmm. And they were actually all like almost three of them were for sure starters in Suggs, Justin Schmidt, and Devin Sandoval. And so yet another parallel that I'm going to make to why I am a fan of what Rhode Island is doing.
Don't curse us, Jacob. Don't curse us. Everything I'm reading on this comment wall is...
It's not everything. It's one man. It's one man's opinion, and that man is Team Earl, so we know he has bad taste. There we go. I'm really excited for you guys. I do think after watching Saturday's match, it's going to be a challenge for you and a real good test of where you sit in the USL Championship after having played some. I mean, you guys beat, was it Bermuda? 8-0.
8-0.
And then 6-1 or 5-1 or something like that the next time. So I think we're going to be a better test than that. Now, if you come out and win 5-1 against us, then by all means, I will eat some crow, but it's going to be a different test for sure. And I'm excited to see where you guys stand in the grand scheme of the USL.
Yeah, and in all honesty, too, I think just for listeners of both podcasts, the real understanding here will come from exactly what formation Coach Cano deploys for the game. It's not been heavily reported. We've kind of announced it, but there are several day-to-day injuries of a lot of our starters that did not dress and have been out for extended periods of time this preseason. So the likes of Connor McGlynn, Mark Doyle, Prince Sadie, JJ Williams, Kofi Chumase, they're all not on at least the active squad. We'll find out tomorrow or at least by Friday's media day to see if they're match fit. There's a rumor that JJ Williams is not going to be available for the first game. So when you take one of the two main goal scoring weapons off of the field, that can be a big game changer. But those injuries will define how coach wants to play this game, whether it's a 4-3-3 or a 3-4-3. Those tend to be his two kind of aces that he likes to pull. A 4-3-3 will have more defensive shape at times, but that's the one that you have to watch out for, because that's where you have Jorge Quezera, who's going to be the player to watch for those of you who will be watching the broadcast, is watching that left midfielder. He can play a wing back, he can play a winger, or he can play a left midfielder, but he will be somewhere in the match on that left flank. And like I said when we were talking about the recap, that's what will tear apart your right defensive shape. He's high risk, high reward. So just like Astorga was, if he overcommits, that will be a counter situation that, depending on if he's the defensive back or if we have Gabriel Alves, who was for Birmingham Legion last year, that will be kind of, I think, where we see a lot of the action, at least in the first 45. But having said that, like, I anticipate this club, no matter what, to play a higher than usual block. So Koke Vegas is known as a sweeper, probably one of the highest ranging sweepers I've ever seen in any league. And he's comfortable with the pairings of most likely Nodarse from RGV and Grant Stoneman. So I anticipate that if there are mistakes that lead to goal scoring opportunities, we're either going to see a very high scoreline on both sides, or we're going to see something where one side's defense shows better than the other, and you'll see another 1-0 or 2-0 result. But right now, as a Rhode Islander, I'm kind of leaning towards a 2-0, because the advantage we have is we've seen you play, you haven't seen us. Coach has been very conservative about making sure not a lot of information gets out about their style of play.
That's and the USL.
We've seen some of what New Mexico is going to bring. Right, totally. So right now, the hopeful in me, and going off of FootMob, is that 71% says Rhode Island's going to win this and seal it up. But at the same time, this is our first game in a temporary stadium. The weather is going to be Rhode Island, New England weather. Like, anything's going to be able to happen in that game.
Yeah, you look at the roster that Rhode Island has put together, and obviously for those of us who, you know, we all tend to follow the Western Conference, there are definitely some familiar names, and Koke Vegas is one that has always played well. against New Mexico United. He had a standout couple of seasons for San Diego Loyal. And I got to say, when I was out there in Hartford last year, I was super impressed with Prince and Connor. And if they're healthy, that is it. Those are some dangerous guys in the midfield, because Connor did some really good things against us when we were out there last year. And, you know, I think Rhode Island has a fantastic roster top to bottom. You look at the names that they've got. You look at some of the talent that's available, you know, obviously, you know, Koke and Stoneman having the familiarity with each other obviously helps. You know, anytime you have guys who've played together before, it's going to make a big difference, particularly in the back. And I'm looking forward to this match on Saturday. I really want to see what happens. And, you know, you talk about folks watching the broadcast live. It will, of course, be on ESPN Plus. Here locally, ESPN Radio is not carrying the broadcast due to high school basketball state tournament. So that's going on. So there won't be a radio broadcast, but really interested to also hear the broadcast. Have you had a chance to meet the broadcast team out there? Have they, you know, are they folks familiar with the area? Are they familiar with the league? You know, what can we expect to hear? Are we going to hear Duke Keith level of homerisms out of them, or are we in for a good show?
So I haven't seen the ESPN assignments yet, to be honest. I was hoping we would pull the likes of like Devin Kerr and Mike Watts for the inaugural, but they laughed and said they had bigger fish to take care of on the day. So I don't know the ESPN yet. We've only been really closely following the NESN, which is the regional sports broadcasting group out here. So we know that setup and we know the in-stadium broadcasters, but we haven't seen the announcements, or at least I haven't been paying attention to know who's going to cover the game.
It'll probably be the NESN crew transposed over to ESPN Plus would be my guess. Because most of the time, from what I've seen, it's the local broadcast is basically just flipped over to ESPN Plus for most of these teams. Thank you, Harry. Thank you for finally popping in an hour and 12 minutes later, and I had to deal with Robert forever. Appreciate
it.
Can
I just say, by the way, answering Robert's question, I'm going to split the difference and say Team Robot. So
that there we go. That.
Some Team Robot appreciate needs that. Some love. So
I'm going to say that that's a cop out. That's not how you truly feel, but I'll accept it.
That's exactly how he feels.
But yeah, that would be my guess. I don't know for sure. Sometimes those ESPN Plus ones get Devin Kerr, Mike Watts, people like that. But that's typically reserved for like the game of the week or Phoenix a lot of years. And so it's hard to say. But hopefully, don't be Duke Keith and don't be Sacramento's broadcast, because those are the two that just drive me up a wall.
I promise we won't. And I will say a fun story. When everyone was doing their practice setup for the scrimmage as a dress rehearsal, so they had the journalists that were there and the media for press. So we got put in our spot in the press box, and the in-game stadium broadcast recorder, who's on the single cam for the Jumbotron, at one point he panned over to our supporters group, and we had probably 75 of them there doing their rehearsal. And we had scored a goal. They lit smoke. The drums were flaring. And they're like, why did they pay those actors to go over and do that? And I looked at him. I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, yeah, those paid actors. I was like, no, those are just fans. And this guy, who's probably only ever watched the Patriots and Red Sox his whole life, couldn't understand that a bunch of crazies just party for 90 minutes plus, and that they're not paid actors by the club.
That's some people.
So we got a lot to work on.
That's all right. It's building something from the ground floor is tough, and I know there's always we had KOAT do a half hour long special for United. KOAT is the ABC affiliate here in Albuquerque, and it was hard to watch. If I'm not like, it was cool that they did it. Like, it was cool that they
it was
like
cringy.
Yeah, it was cool that they were like, yeah, we're going to do an hour-long special on United. I'm like, cool, that's great. And then I watched it, and I'm like, you guys don't know a damn thing about what you're talking about as far as soccer goes, and it shows. But I appreciate the effort and hope that it gets a little bit better.
Well, and see, that's the thing. We've talked about it a couple times throughout the show about media coverage of lower league soccer. yes, we have our local, you know, ABC, CBS affiliates that come in and they cover the match. They give them, you know, give United, you know, 3 to 5 minutes every night on the 10 o'clock broadcast. But this is where lower league soccer lives and breathes. Fan casts, you know, fan blogs, things like that, you know, and we do have some, you know, I will say Ken Sickinger over at the Journal does a great job covering the club. Ken does a fantastic job. But that's how I got into it. Like I mentioned earlier, like the Jacob mentioned it, you know, there was very little coverage of our first win, very little. And sure. Yeah. They show up, you know, but after like media day, preseason stuff, like the, it's down to, you know, someone's there for like half a game and that's it, you know? So like, yeah, build it, grow it. This is where, and people that just don't understand the game. And I'll be honest, my boss over at the radio station, he's still to this day. He asked me, hey, what's going on? He'll ask me to explain things to him, and which is great in some senses. But yeah, it's, you know, when you see that amount of excitement and people that aren't familiar, they just don't know. They don't understand it. They don't understand the love for the sport that people have. And, you know, it's great what you guys are doing. Yo, El Jefe in the house. Pete, how are you, buddy? We're so glad to see you. Thank you for popping in. Guys,
Pete, feel free to type whatever you want in the chat.
Wow. Peter, how you doing, buddy? Glad to see you. You know, we were certainly happy to see everyone out there Saturday, but tailgate went off on Saturday. Umami Moto did some fantastic stuff, but
I heard the cook was very, very slow.
Yeah.
Just from what I heard walking around the tailgate, there was a lot of complaints about how slow the head chef was in that trailer.
Earl, we're trying to get Pete to give us information. Why?
No, that's literally what I heard. I didn't get in line, but
I didn't hear that for the record, Pete. So you're fine. Just keep on doing your thing.
But yeah, no, it's great to see collaboration between the clubs. It's great to see you, Matt, and, you know, raising anchor and seeing what you guys are doing. And I know we've got plans for Jacob to head over to you guys later this week. So what we'll do, and typically we close our show with scoreline predictions. Jacob, we'll let you save yours until later this week. Earl and I will go ahead and give ours. So, I mean, Earl, knowing what we know about what we've seen from week one, what we've heard from Matt here tonight, what is your prediction for Saturday in Rhode Island FC's inaugural home match?
So, I mean, Matt kind of hit it on the head a while ago. I don't like the matchup at all. I mean, yeah, we have a defense. They also have a very strong defense.
If this is just like, yeah, we play soccer, they play soccer. So it's going to be a soccer game.
Will someone mute that guy? I swear to God.
I'll do it.
Shout out to Irvin Vargas, president of the supporters group for Rhode Island's Defiance 1636. He gave you guys the handshake right there. I just want to interrupt real fast. Sorry.
Oh, appreciate that. Yeah, and I appreciate you being here.
Oh, you're good. So like I was saying, I don't like it because their defense, Rhode Island's defense, is super, super stout. I mean, they have names up and down that it's not even funny. Our defense, like we've said before, has looked good. I mean, we finally have a defense that we can actually kind of brag about. That we can brag about. But I don't know about this one. Like, I really don't. I like our attack, but I mean, they have Dikwa, they have Sadie. They have so many attacking options. And I'm trying to drag time because I know Jacob's itching over there. I say 0-0.
Cool.
Wow.
No
That's
way.
Ballsy.
No That's way. Ballsy. That's the hottest take of the year right there. Lock that in.
Wow. Week two, Earl with a hot take. There we go. Interesting, Earl. It's Harry over in the chat. 3-1 New Mexico. Harry. All right, Harry. Hopefully we capitalize on the first game ever, use a collective experience to spoil their opener. Well, see, while I agree with that to some extent, there's a lot of experience on that Rhode Island roster. there really is. Again, we mentioned some of the names earlier, you know, Koke Vegas, Connor McGlynn, Grant Stillman, Albert Dequa. There's experience top to bottom across that line. And, you know, traveling literally across the entire country is going to be a test. Now, granted, it's not, you know, an early, you know, kickoff by any stretch of the imagination, you know, 4 o'clock Eastern, 2 o'clock Mountain. I agree with Matt. I don't think this is a goalless draw. I just don't see it. As much faith as I have in Alex and our back line, and as much as I don't like Koke Vegas because he's done some really big things against us in the past, I mean, I see this going. I'm going to say 2-1 Rhode Island in this one.
Pandering judge, he's clearly pandering to the guest here. I mean, this is absolutely ridiculous. What are we doing here?
Hold on. I want to change my vote. I'm going with whoever Mudef is. That one right there, 2-0, us.
10. There you go.
No way. So it's just not going to happen. I think that. You guys, Jacob, I'm gonna let you go last because that way it doesn't end with a Rhode Island.
I was gonna save it for your pod, but I can change my take between now and then.
No, so. We should still get this in. You're
okay. Okay.
We'll get some updated information. Earl, here's why it can't be a nil. I think that both of our back lines, defensively, to your point a second ago, they are, but they're also untested. And you guys have to figure out how to contain Dequa. And if you can't do that, there's three other options. But I think the real test will come in the final minutes of the game and like the last 15. Whose depth is the strongest? I know our depth is lining up to be very good at closing off games and killing them. From what I saw on your side, I think that's also a real opportunity for you guys to show up. So I think this could be kind of a sleeper in the first 45 as they try to size each other up. Maybe it's 1-1, maybe it's 1-0 one side. I think this is a 2-2 draw. I think that Rhode Island is new enough that some things won't go our way, and you guys will punish that and capitalize. But I also think that Rhode Island's too offensively stacked that we don't put one or two on the board. So I'm going 2-2 on our side.
So I have mentioned, I've praised you guys, Matt. I've praised you guys this whole show and how I love what you guys are doing. That being said, as an expansion club, even though you have a lot of talent and a lot of people, even though you have a lot of talent and players that have played in this league, soccer is very much about everything meshing, coming together, which you guys have looked very solid through the preseason. You yourself, though, has said the preseason opponents, not exactly the cream of the crop, right? And so I think it's going to be a little bit of a shock, at least to start. I think if we can take advantage of that 15 to 20 minute period to start the match of you guys coming out to what is 5,400, 5,000 even, something like that.
5,000, 5,500, 6,000 minutes or something like that. I think that's the song. So
thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
It's over five. I actually don't remember the number. It's like 5,000.
5,000 and something. I don't remember.
Rhode Island fans in the chat. What's the number? You guys are smarter than me at that.
But coming out full stadium, it's going to be an adjustment for you guys. I think, I know you guys played in front of fans against Providence, 5,225. And so if we can take advantage of that 20 minute period where you guys are, you might be like we were that first 10 minutes against Pittsburgh, where you're kind of iffy, trying to feel everything out. Robert comes out and he's like Jerry, guys. He's like Jerry from El Paso. It's just Robert from San Antonio coming in and ruining everything. You have the Rhode Island Cup. I appreciate that, even though you still have the New Mexico scarf on. That was a good touch.
put it in there and drink it. It'd probably be better.
I think if we can jump on you guys that first 20 minutes, get a goal, maybe two, I think we'll be in a good enough position to hang on. I don't think it's going to come out. I don't think we're going to come out. I don't think we're going to drop three or four on you and walk away with another clean sheet. I like the guys, your guys' attacking talent too much. And so I lean towards a 3-1 or 3-2, 2-1 type scoreline. My official one, I think, is going to be 3-2. I think we'll be up 3-1. And you guys will make it interesting in the last 20 minutes because we've been known to give up a lead or two in the past. So unless we just have like a terrible run of form, I will never predict us to lose. So I'm not going to do that now, even though I appreciate what everything you guys are doing and the team you guys have put together. And I really do believe like the offense, especially in that first half against Pittsburgh, kind of showed me that like, look, man, if you're not like very well put together in the back, we're going to cause some problems. And I think we can finish a couple more than we did against Pittsburgh. And so I'll go 3-2. So we have Seth over here predicting a loss because he's a soulless robot that should take that hoodie off if he's going to make predictions like that.
Impartial.
Earl originally predicting 0-0, which probably was the craziest take I've ever heard. And Matt, I respect your take. A 2-2 draw is probably about right, but I won't predict even a draw right now with the high that we're feeling after the offensive showing that we had and enjoy the way we controlled the match against Pittsburgh.
Yeah, we certainly enjoy it while it lasts. We had a number of other topics that we planned on getting to, but I mean, we're already an hour and a half in.
Wait, this isn't a 2.5 hour marathon. I thought I was podcasting till 1 a.m.
We do still have people watching, so we can, yeah. As long as it's on the topic of this and not wrestling, Earl, or something like that, then we can talk about a couple more things if we need to.
I do want to take you, Josh. A shameless plug to just talk about the in-game experience for Rhode Island FC and New Mexico United. I know you guys have some fans traveling, and I don't know if they'll listen to our side of the things. I did see you guys retweeted that post, but I do want to say on your guys's pod, there are some things that New Mexico United fans that are traveling should know. This is going to be a shit show. In terms of how our logistics work, we have not yet done this to scale. So it's a single lane access to a school university that is going to suddenly have 3,000 to 6,000 cars in it that it hasn't done before at this scale. So one, show up early. The parking lot opens at 1, and I'm sure there will have people queuing to like get into the parking lot even earlier than that. So if you want to show up, make sure that that's available to you and plan accordingly. There is this situation where we have an overflow that's across the street, like a mile away, that you have to get shuttled in. It's not a great look for the club. It's not a great look for the fans, but that's the problem when your stadium doesn't get finished on time and you have to play out of a college facility for your first year. So showing up early is going to be really important. Number two, and we just learned this yesterday, is that the entire venue is cashless. So that's beer, that's food trucks, that's merchandise, that's your parking. So make sure that you have things ready to go on your phone or you have your credit and debit cards with you. And then that's a really weird dovetail into the internet and cell service is bad. And when it overloads to that capacity, the club didn't come out and say this, but I'm just putting the dots together that if it is cashless and you're whether you're trying to use your card on a payment terminal or you're trying to use Google Pay or Apple Pay, it's going to take a while. So be patient. Because that's probably not going to be an ideal experience. So be kind. We'll be kind back. And also, too, for anyone that's looking for a tailgate experience, I'm not going to extend an invite to the supporters group. If Irvin's still in the chat, I'll let him do that. But if anyone's a wayward fan that doesn't have a place to hang out and talk, I'm sure those guys are more than willing to put you up for the day if you guys don't have your own travel plans and kind of like pack mentality on the day. But those are like the housekeeping items that anyone coming out for the game, I just want to make sure you guys know. And come find me and Jason. We'll be walking around. You know what I look like now if you watched it, and you can check the socials if you want to see pictures of me. I don't know why. That's not what sells on this podcast. It's me eating the chili sauce. But those are just the important things I want to make sure gets out. Yeah,
and the tattoo. Yeah,
exactly.
Well, I mean, you could have been talking about United's games too. There, we're a cashless facility. The internet sucks. See, there,
first few home games were a shit show as well.
And our first year, like, there were people, like, hundreds of people lined up to get into the stadium in like the 20th minute still. So it's we know the pain. You'll grow out of it, and hopefully, because you guys did a great job. I listened to the podcast today, actually, talking about it, and the fact that you guys are out there putting it out there, trying to get on the front foot of it, I think will help you out a lot. And I know our guys will be there tailgating, so they'll get there as early as they can.
Awesome.
Well, with all that being said, Matt, where can people find you? Where can people find your podcast? How can they?
Hang on, before Matt,
fuck your professionalism, Seth.
No. I want to thank El Jefe Peter for sending us 99 stars.
Yo, Pete, appreciate that.
Feel like that could have waited 10 seconds.
I'm gonna let Matt finish, but
yeah, exactly.
Pete just gave us 99 stars.
He did say good luck to you
to support the show. So yeah, Pete, there. Good luck to Rhode Island. Great to see you in the league. Nothing like the first game. Yeah, absolutely.
Embrace it. His first stars ever, by the way.
We appreciate that, Pete. We really do. We appreciate everything that you've done for us and the opportunity you've given us to connect with the club and work with you guys. So we appreciate that, Pete. Thank you.
Pete's the owner, Matt, in case you didn't know.
I wasn't going to interrupt Earl saying that I knew that. I wanted him to get his thing out before he interrupted. I'm just kidding, Earl. I gotta.
So where can we find you guys?
Keep it up.
Where can we find you guys?
I'm never coming back here. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, so you guys can find us.
Okay. Where is it?
I'm gonna mess this up now, probably this time. You can find us on Instagram at Raising Anchor, and then every other social channel is at RIFC Podcast. So that's Twitter, that's TikTok, that's Threads. And then we have a website, www.raisinganchorpodcast.com. We're on every major streaming platform. So whatever you like to listen to your pods, such as this one, we're on that site as well. So if you ever feel so inclined to give us a listen or just check out what's going on in our space, we try to do updates all the time and keep listeners and fans of the team and the league engaged. So.
And I'm going to push as many New Mexico fans your way, like after this weekend. It's nice that we're your first game, so we can get that out of the way. And then we can just root for you the rest of the way. And so if any other New Mexico United fans are out there looking for a team to cover and follow in, or not cover, but follow in the East and root for, I think Rhode Island is just an obvious fit. And if you're going to do that, then you better listen to Raising Anchor, because they're putting out quality. I mean, their quality stuff is better than ours, and they've been doing it for an off season. And so go listen to them, go root for that team aside from Saturday. And I think I'm not the only one that kind of feels that way. I think part of the reason why there's fans traveling out there for this match is because they like what you're doing, and they like that you guys are coming into the league at a good time, and they're excited for it just like I am. So we appreciate you having you on. I'll continue to listen to you guys all year, and I can't wait to be on Thursday.
Likewise, we can't wait to have you on.
All right, there we go. That's so go give Raising Anchor and give Matt a follow, give them a listen. Great show, really is. And like Jacob said, you know, pick a team in the East and follow them. Mine was Atlanta United too, but them's the breaks.
You mean ATL UTD too?
Yeah.
You can't say it all the way. You gotta use the stupid acronyms.
Yeah, that sounds we gotta like use an infection, right?
It does. Or
it really, really does. So with all that being said, thank you guys so much for being here. Jacob, get us out of here.
Right, you're not going to see if Earl has any. Cool.
Nope.
Good idea. Good idea. Yeah. So it was a great first week. Saw a fantastic match. felt all kinds of energy out there. It was really nice to be out there and kind of feel like we as a podcast have grown, especially this off season somehow. And we were out there. I had a couple people actually recognize us somehow and come and approach us. And I encourage everybody to do that. Just like Matt said, if you're at in Rhode Island on Saturday to come find him and Jason walking around, do the same thing for us when we're at New Mexico United matches. It's we really appreciate it. We like hearing from you, like all the feedback. Who was it over here? Somebody in the chat, I can't find it right now, said the chat is popping tonight, and they're not wrong. We had a couple Rhode Island guys over there. We had a bunch of our guys, and then we had El Jefe himself pop into the chat. And so we appreciate every single one of you, and except for you, Robert. Actually, I take that back. Robert, you can just leave, actually. but no, seriously, guys, we really appreciate it. We'll be back Tuesday. We'll be covering and recapping the 3 points that we get in Rhode Island. And hopefully being able to look forward to who's the next match, Seth. You should be all facts over there. I can't remember. It's another away match. I think it might be Monterey Bay, but I can't remember. And so we'll be back to preview that one, recap the Rhode Island match, no matter what happens.
Charleston.
Is it Charleston? Okay. And then Earl coming in with some professionalism, getting it before Seth. Wow. I thought the robot had all that in his head.
I had the schedule up.
Oh, okay. Anyways, yeah, couldn't be happier, Matt. Thank you again. If you're still listening somehow, catch me on their podcast. That'll come out Friday
morning at 5 a.m. Eastern.
So it'll be in your podcast players Friday morning. You guys don't do a live, right?
Not yet. No, that's after we need more practice. We're not all as profesh as Earl is.
Fair. Nobody is.
That was a compliment, Earl. That was a compliment.
Nobody is.
I'm about to ruin it all, just so you know.
So we'll be... let's just do this. don't threaten me, Earl. so I'll be on. We'll record that Thursday, and then you guys can catch it on Friday. We'll talk more about the match. I'll be able to bring a little bit more insight and talk to Jason about New Mexico United, and I'll dive a little bit more and deeper into what I think New Mexico United will look like shape wise and roster or lineup wise coming into Saturday's match. So catch us on Tuesday. Be sure to keep engaging on social medias with us. Be sure to go to, we had this debate, Seth, are we still on Stitcher or no?
I don't think anybody's on Stitcher.
Fair enough.
Isn't Stitcher gone?
I don't know.
I think they are.
I think it's gone.
But yeah,
I think it's
we're on gone. Pretty much every major podcast platform.
Yeah.
And I mean, because we made a list here, they were on like 9 different podcast platforms, and there's like 7 more that we can get on, but I don't think anyone actually uses them.
Yeah. If you're not using Spotify or honestly, even Apple Podcasts is crap or has been lately. Anyways, I haven't used it in a while, but you can catch us on all of those. Be sure to go rate and review us on all of those. If you're not following us on any of the social media platforms, please do so. And then, of course, with YouTube, please subscribe there, and you'll be able to see us pop up in your feed there every time we go live and shortly thereafter. And hopefully, eventually, Matt and Jason can be doing that as well, and you can catch them live at some point. But until then, guys, Somos Unidos.
You've been listening to Somos Mas, your source for the latest news and notes on New Mexico United, the USL, and the New Mexico Runners. All of our shows are recorded live on Tuesday nights and are streamed on our YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter pages. An audio-only version of the show goes live later in the week on all major podcast platforms. Our show is written and produced by Seth Bidoff, Jacob Terrell, and Earl Nieto, and is edited by Seth. All episodes are recorded and edited using StreamYard and Audacity.